Good morning.
Morning.
Certainly good to have everybody out today. We're going to be in the book of Job, starting in chapter 10. The title lesson is The Struggles of the Human Soul. In the beginning, God took dust of the ground and formed man, just like you take clay and form a bowl, and he breathed into it. And the word breathe is spirit. He put his spirit in it to become a living soul. The soul is the part that interfaces between you and the world out there. As you receive things from your senses, soul evaluates that and adjusts to it, and most of the time it's struggle. And boy, if there wasn't an anchor for the soul, where would people be? Job's lost everything. He's a righteous man, one of the richest men in the world. But he lost everything in one day. I mean, he lost his family, all he had was his wife, and lost all his goods. And he's covered with boils from head to toe. And he says in chapter 10, verse 1 through 3, he talks about frustration. You know, in general, you know, you struggle with things. I loathe my own life. I'll give full vent to my complaint. I'll speak in the bitterness of my soul. You know, all of us have made mistakes and done something really dumb, and it doesn't go down well. There's nothing you can do about it. You feel bad about it. And I mean, there's a bitterness there. And he loathes his life. I mean, it's horrible. And he's going to give full vent to it. I mean, he's going to complain. I mean, this is hard to take considering who he was. And now he's just sitting there with all this pain because of the boils. So he's going to speak in the bitterness of his soul. He's going to speak to God. Verse 2, I'll say to God, do not condemn me. Let me know why thou dost contend with me. Life was perfect and life was good, and now it seems like him and God are fighting it out here. That God's putting pressure on him, and don't condemn me, but I'm complaining. You know, the bitterness, I'm forced to say it. Verse 3, is it right for thee indeed to oppress, to reject the labor of my hands, and to look favorably on the schemes of the wicked? He's a righteous man. He hasn't done anything wrong. It's Satan is the problem. Satan says the only reason he serves God is because God blesses him. Because God puts a hedge around and protects him. You take away the protection, you take away the blessings, he'll curse you to your face. That's the way Satan thinks. He said God believes in Job. Job doesn't know any of this. And he says there's an inward struggle in that soul. There's a bitterness of his soul. It's not fair that the wicked aren't suffering like I'm suffering. I'm righteous, and you and I ask that sometimes. You know, why are they getting ahead? And here we go to church. We paid, give money to the Lord. We do good. And why? The soul goes through a lot of struggles. Chapter 30 of Job, verse 15 and 16. Fears within cause fears without. Job 30, verse 15. Terrors are turned against me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity is passed away like a cloud. I mean, the cloud's there, and you look, it's gone. All his fortune is gone. And with fortune, you're respected. And even if you're a sorry individual, guess what? People give you glory and honor. And he's lost it. And there is these terrors that are turned against him, and these fears. Verse 16, and now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have seized me. There's nothing left in him. My soul is poured out within him. What do you do? What do you say? Where is it going? Is it ever going to end? And it's like all these afflictions have grabbed him and choking him, the life out of him. You know, and the soul can grieve. In chapter 30, verse 24 and 25, it says, yet does not one in a heap of ruin stretch out his hand, or in his disaster therefore cry out for help? And he's on a heap of ruins. And you know what everybody who's in deep trouble does? They cry out to God for help. I mean, the people in real trouble do that. Verse 25, have I not wept for the one whose life is hard? Was not my soul grieved for the needy? He was rich and he could help. And he just didn't live his life to himself. He was concerned about the helpless, for he was helpless. He could see their cries and their needs. His soul grieved. You know, the righteous Lot lived in Sodom and Gomorrah, and his righteous soul was vexed every day over what he saw. I mean, we struggle with things inwardly based on what's happening to us or what we see around us, and we have to deal with it. Sometimes it's grievous. Verse 26 through 31 of chapter 30, disappointments. Verse 26, when I expected good, then evil came. When I waited for the light, then darkness came. No good expectations. No hope. He lived his life and he's doing well and he's doing right. And he expects good to come. And good didn't come. It's one thing for good not to come, but it's another thing for evil to come in his place. And that's what's happened. Bad things have happened. Disappointments you got to deal with. Verse 27, I'm seething within and cannot relax. Days of affliction confront me. You have to deal with it. I mean, he's seething. He's just upset. He can't relax. I mean, everything's unknown. You know, wife says to you, why are you pacing? Who knows? I'm just pacing. You know, something's at unease. You know, you might not even put your finger on it. But he's seething within and he cannot relax because of these days of affliction. They're confronting him. They're challenging him. Verse 28, I go about mourning without comfort. I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help. I become a brother to jackals and a companion to ostriches. He's all alone. The jackals live out there in the desert hunting with by themselves. He's all alone. How did I get to this point? The disappointments in life can beat you down. You know, verse 30, my skin turns black on me and my bones burn with fever. Therefore, my harp is turned to mourning and my flute to the sound of those who weep. There's no joy. I mean, he looks at his skin, the boils, now he's turning black. He's got a fever down deep. And if he played a harp, boy, it'd be a mourning song. It wouldn't be a festival. It wouldn't be cheerful. The human soul struggles with a lot of things in life. And they can destroy it, can beat it down. And point number two, it longs for relief at times. Look at chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 20 and 21. Why is light given to him who suffers and life to the bitter a soul? Why can't I die? Why does God keep giving me another day when this thing is horrible? And I just keep suffering and suffering. Why? Verse 21, who long for death, but there is none, and dig for it more than for hidden treasures. All bad things can happen, and your soul can get to the breaking point where you want to die. You think you'll be better off. You know, and he's talking about like digging for treasures. I mean, you're digging. They're digging hard, trying to find that treasure, and he's looking for death. There'll be some relief there. Verse 22, who rejoice greatly, they exult when they find the grave. Oh, chapter 21, verse 13 through 16, or 23 through 26. They exult when they find the grave. And he's going to compare two men in this life. One dies in full strength, being wholly at ease and satisfied. His sides are filled out with fat and the marrow of his bones moist. I mean, he's lived well. He ate well. He's physically healthy. Verse 25, while another dies with a bitter soul, never even tasting anything good, together they lie down in the dust and worms cover them. In the end, it's the grave. Dust to dust. You come from dust, you go to dust. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter. It's all equalized then. And we cover you with dirt and worms and, you know, that's the grave. And some people think there's no feeling in the soul. The soul doesn't live on after death. And that's a terrible mistake. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28. You know, Jesus came to earth and Jesus explained a lot of things. In the Old Testament, death is a murky, dark world called Sheol. And you go to the grave and that's kind of it. And you get a little glimpse. It might be life after it. Jesus is straightforward. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28. And so do not fear those who kill the body, but able to kill the soul. But rather fear him who's able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Boy, you need to get your fears right. You fear some bad person here on earth who can kill you. The worst they can do is kill your body. They can't kill your soul. God can destroy both body and soul in hell. The soul continues to live on. The soul is the part that senses the environments around you and reacts to them. Job's still alive. But there's this horrible struggle and horrible bitterness involved in life. Well, Jesus said there's something worse that can happen to man. And that's God put you in hell. Not only will your body be destroyed, but your soul will be destroyed. It never gets better. There's no hope. There's no relief. There's no death coming to get you out of this thing. No, destruction just continues. In Mark chapter 9, verse 43 through 44, Jesus repeats three times, trying to express the seriousness of sinfulness. And he talks about the soul and the horribleness that comes to soul in hell. And if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than having your two hands to go into hell, into the unquenchable fire. Nobody wants to cut their hand off. Over in the Muslim world, they cut your hand off for stealing, and that slows down stealing all through the country. Nobody wants to do that. But boy, you'd be better off with one hand if you're a thief than going into hell with both of them. I mean, if you want some friendly advice, better. Why would you be better? Because your soul doesn't die. And then he says in 44, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. And what he's referring to is Gehenna. The word hell is Gehenna in Greek. And the word comes from the valley of Ben-Hinnom, referred to in Jeremiah. And as you travel up south from Jerusalem, you can fork either way, and to the left is the valley of Hinnom. The valley of Hinnom is a garbage dump. At any point in time, there can be a carcass. Part of it smoldering. And part of it the worms are eating. He says, imagine that you're the carcass and you got a soul. And the worms are eating part of it. And the burning doesn't go out, and you're aware of both forever. Horrible picture. But the soul doesn't die. If a person's not right with God, then that struggle goes on and on and on without any relief. That agony. You know, you go back to Job chapter 23, verse 12 through 16. God has a soul. That God reacts with feeling toward whatever goes on around him. I mean, a lot of people don't want to do his will. He has no feelings about that. Oh, he has feelings. In Job chapter 23, verse 12, I have not departed from the command of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. I'm not at fault. I love the words of God. God with a soul trying to give us direction to save our souls. And I've treasured those words more than food that you need. I would hang on to the Word and nourish it. Let it nourish me rather than physical food. Verse 13, but he is unique. And who can turn him? When what his soul desires, that he does. He has a soul. We were made in the image of God, three parts, body, soul, and spirit. God has one too. And you can't turn him. He makes decisions and has thoughts and decides. And that's it. 14. for he performs what is appointed for me. In many such degrees are within him. He knows me, I know him, and he decides this is where I need to be. You know, in the midst of all that pain and agony, his soul can come back to God and his knowledge of God. 14, he performs what is appointed for me, and many of such decrees are with him. Therefore, I would be dismayed at his presence when I consider I'm terrified of him. Not knowing God leads to a lot of mistakes. Not knowing God and who he is and what he controls the eternal destiny of us, can end up in a great disappointment. It is God that has made my heart faint, and the Almighty who has dismayed me. But I'm not silenced by the darkness nor deep gloom which covers me. Is awareness of God and knowing God in God's soul. You know, you look at Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29 and 30. That he talks about how we use our tongue, and he makes a statement in 30 that's important. In 29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but it's only such a word as good for edification, according to the need of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear. Many times words don't give grace to people. In fact, they're hurtful. He says, don't do that. Why? Verse 30. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. For Christians, they need to watch their tongue. You can grieve God. God has a soul. The Holy Spirit has feelings. You can hurt him deeply. You can insult him. And if he leaves, there's nothing between you and eternity. He is the guarantee of God Jesus coming back and get you. In Hebrews chapter 6, you know, he talks about there's an anchor for the soul. And I'll come back to that next week. In Hebrews chapter 6, verse 18 through 20, in order that by two unchangeable things in which it's impossible for God to lie, we may have strong encouragement. We who have fled for refuge and laying hold of the hope set before us. The church realizes they need a refuge. There's a day of judgment coming, and they need a safe place to hide during that time. And he says, we're talking about the basis of strong encouragement when things go bad. When your soul's despaired of life and bitterness sets in and you have reason to be bitter because things aren't going your way, there is a reason to have hope and strong encouragement. Verse 19, this hope we have is an anchor of the soul, a hope both sure and steadfast and one which enters within the veil. Talking about the Old Testament system where you go into the very presence of God, only the high priest was allowed in there. And that you have an anchor when everything's swaying you and throwing you, and you don't know, and you want to blame God, you want to cry out, and you're disappointed, you know, and you live in a world of disappointments, and you have an anchor of your soul, a hope that goes into the very presence of God. Verse 20, where Jesus has entered as a forerunner for us, having become a high priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. The every Christian has Jesus standing between them and God. Jesus the righteous. Jesus the advocate. Jesus standing there as a forerunner, showing the way to the presence of God in eternity. We may have struggles. You know, we may have frustrations and fears, and things may not go good at times. We may have bad attitudes at times. We're reacting to what we see, what we feel, and a lot of times that's not good, but it's normal. But for the Christian, there's an anchor where you don't have to be swayed back and forth. Job doesn't know what's happening to him. It's a test. It's God using him to show the devil how wrong the devil is, that there are people out there that will believe in him, even if they're not blessed. There are people that respect the dignity and the honor and the greatness of God. And now God's given them Jesus to look out for them when they're wrong, to come to their aid when they need aid. We have an anchor for the soul. We don't have to be beaten down. We can rise up. Oh, Jesus, put to death innocently as a criminal. God raised him from the dead because he liked Jesus. Jesus was perfect. Jesus would yield to his will. Jesus would sacrifice himself if necessary. And then he ascends to heaven. His disciples go out and preach the gospel to every creature. He has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but his disbelief shall be condemned. Mark 16, 15, 16. I mean, offering people salvation, offering people hope, even to people that have said crucifying. God in his greatness trying to help man in the depth of his problems. Lots of people don't even feel guilty for doing wrong. They got a soul, but they don't feel remorse. And they continue down that road of bitterness and hatefulness. And then you got the Christian that believes in Jesus. And when things go awry, they have an anchor. And they know it. And they continue, and he can lead them. Whatever you do, rely on your anchor. You need to respond anyway. Won't you come as we stand and sing?